Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello and welcome to our half-hour English feature program. I'm Susie Hodges. These are the stories coming up on today's program. Vatican anniversary. Pope Benedict addresses participants attending the seminar marking the 80th anniversary of the Vatican City State's foundation, saying it is a peaceful state that works for the common good. Pope and bishops. Pope Benedict urges the bishops of Nigeria to confront the challenge of ethnic conflict wherever present, even within the church. Who was Saint Valentine? His story is lost in the mists of time, and he isn't even considered one of the church's foremost saints. But the cult surrounding this 3rd century martyr has spawned a multi-million dollar business on his feast day. And Marriage Lifeline. A married couple who were on the brink of divorce tell us about a program that rescued and healed their marriage and that of thousands of other couples in crisis. Pope Benedict has addressed participants at the seminar marking the 80th anniversary of the founding of the Vatican City State, saying it is a tiny, peaceful state that works for the common good. Sean Patrick Lovett picks up the story.
80 years ago this week, the Kingdom of Italy and the Holy See signed a series of agreements by which the Vatican City State was created. As Pope Benedict XVI recalled in his remarks to the participants, the 1929 Lateran Treaty was the culmination of a long and often troubled history that spanned three pontificates and involved sensitive and difficult negotiations. It created the world's smallest sovereign territory to guarantee the leader of the world's biggest mission would be free from the influence of any earthly power.
La Civitas Vaticana è in verità un punto quasi invisibile sui mappamondi della geografia mondiale.
The Holy Father said today the Vatican City State has faced and risen to meet many difficulties throughout its history and has proved itself equal to the needs of the Church and to the challenges posed by a changing society.
Possa la città del Vaticano essere sempre più una vera città sul monte.
Pope Benedict prayed that the Vatican might always be a city on a hill, luminous thanks to the convictions and the generous dedication of all those who work to advance the mission of Peter's successor. I'm Sean Patrick Lovett.
Earlier on Saturday, Pope Benedict urged the Catholic bishops of Nigeria to confront the challenge of ethnic conflict wherever present, even within the church. The Pope's remarks came in a wide-ranging address to the Nigerian bishops, who are in Rome on their ad limina visits. Chris Altieri reports.
Pope Benedict XVI's remarks focused on the Church's remarkable recent growth in Nigeria, as well as the ways in which the Church can act as a catalyst for social cohesion.
The abundant priestly and religious vocations are also a clear sign of the work of the Spirit among you.
The Pope went on to say the bishop's efforts to promote goodwill can help the Church become a clearer sign and instrument of communion with God and of the unity of the whole human race.
Your dedication to derive from Catholic principles enlightened comments on current national problems is greatly appreciated. The natural law, inscribed by the Creator on the heart of every human being, and the Gospel, properly understood and applied to civic and political realities, do not in any way reduce the range of valid political options. On the contrary, they constitute a guarantee offered to all citizens of a life of freedom with respect for their dignity as persons and protection from ideological manipulation and abuse based in the law of the strongest.
The Pope also looked forward to the upcoming African Synod of Bishops, saying the bishops there will address, among other themes, the topic of ethnic unrest.
The marvelous image of the heavenly Jerusalem, the gathering of innumerable men and women from every tribe and tongue and people and nation who have been ransomed by the blood of Christ, encourages you to confront the challenge of ethnic conflict wherever present, even within the Church.
Pope Benedict told the bishops their readiness to adapt to others is an eloquent sign that, As the new family of all who believe in Christ, there is no place in the Church for any kind of division, and that catechumens and neophytes must be taught to accept this truth as they make their commitment to Christ and to a life of Christian love. I'm Chris Altieri.
His story is lost in the mists of time, and he isn't even considered one of the Church's foremost saints. But the cult surrounding the 3rd century martyr, St. Valentine, has spawned a multi-million dollar business on his feast day. According to the early martyrologies, there are at least two Valentines who lived in the 3rd century. One was the Bishop of Terni in Italy, whilst the other was a Christian priest in Rome. Some accounts even speculate that these two figures were actually the same man. According to the popular story, the priest Valentine was a kind-hearted man who married young Christian couples against the wishes of the Roman emperor and was beheaded for his deeds on or about the year 270 AD. Some two centuries later, Pope Gelasius I named February the 14th as St. Valentine's Day. In modern times, the cult surrounding St. Valentine has triggered a massive global business around the sending of Valentine cards, red roses, and other romantic tributes to one's loved one on February the 14th. But how did this 3rd century martyr become the patron saint of lovers in the first place? And what would he make of all the commercialization surrounding his name day in modern times? Well, to find out the answers, I spoke to Father Chris Crowley, prior of the Carmelite community at the White Friars Church in Dublin, Ireland, that holds some of the relics of St. Valentine. Ireland is one of several European countries that are home to relics of this saint. The others are found in Italy, France, Malta, Austria, England and Scotland. I began by asking Father Crowley how the relics of St. Valentine ended up in the Dublin Church.
Each day is Valentine.
The relics of St. Valentine were gifted to Father John Spratt, who restored the Carmelite order to great vitality in Dublin in the early 1800s. And during a visit to Rome in 1835, where he was received as a celebrated preacher, he preached in the presence of the Pope of the day, who was impressed. Irish Catholicism was being revitalized after the harsh penal days, and I suppose he gifted many Irish clergy who came to Rome, but he gave Valentine to our Father John Spratt, who brought it home and has been here at White Friars Church at the heart of Dublin ever since.
There are, of course, other churches, well, a number of other churches in France, Malta, Austria, England and Scotland, who also say they have some relics of the saint. Is there some sort of friendly rivalry between you all?
No, there's no rivalry whatsoever. It's quite common practice. Altar stones and Catholic Church high altars, generally speaking, would have relics of early martyrs or some saints in their altar stone, as we say, which is at the centre of the altar where the Holy Eucharist is consecrated. So Valentine may be in many, many places. And as well as that, we understand that there were about 14 martyred Christians in the early church called Valentine.
Okay, tell us a little bit about what happens on his feast day each year in your church.
On the eve of the feast day, the evening before, we take the casket from its ordinary resting place at his shrine altar and let it rest before the high altar. And it's there for the whole of St. Valentine's Day, and then we return it to its customary relic place. And during the day, people, the media in Ireland usually give it some mention, and more people will come to visit our church on that day than on other days of the year. Just to touch the casket with a prayer or for a bit of luck. We're touchy people, I suppose, and we like to touch things that are holy, especially in invocation of God's blessing, St. Valentine's prayers, and better to do it than not to do it.
And is there also, during the Eucharist, a blessing of the rings of married couples on St. Valentine's Day?
That's right. At more than one church services on that day, towards the end of the Mass, after communion time usually. We bless rings of all sorts, rings that are important to people for whatever particular significance, with particular emphasis both on people committed to one another through engagement or in marriage itself.
Okay, now let's find out a little bit more about the legend of St. Valentine, because his story is somewhat lost in the mist of time, isn't it?
I
believe that one of the early accounts says that there were two Valentines who suffered martyrdom for the faith in the 3rd century. What's your information on this?
Sure, there were a number of martyrs called Valentine who were quite prepared to die and who in fact were put to death as martyrs for the faith in the early centuries of the Church, during the persecutions. But our Valentine, we believe, is associated with the 14th of February in particular, and that's when we celebrate his feast, because that was a day celebrating and held as an honour in pagan Rome, as we would say, to honour Juno, queen of the pagan gods and goddesses. And she was the goddess of women and the goddess of marriage. And then the next day after that began the Feast of Lupercalia. And this was celebrated in grand style, with the Romans carrying out fertility rites, invoking their goddess Februa, from whom the month of February takes its name. And mating was conducted on that day also. At the time, boys and girls were brought up strictly apart from one another, but families who wanted to retain or strengthen connections, they would betroth one of their sons to the girl of another family. So it's very associated with love and commitment and marriage as such. And one of the customs as people grew older on that day was an intriguing one, really. Names would be put, as what we would say today, into a hat, and boys and girls were drawn off with one another, and they were sort of paired together until the same time the following year. And then if their association worked happily, they would become betrothed, and in time they would be married, and their families would be very happy and pleased.
So just to make things clear, the Saint Valentine, whose relics you have in your church, was he the priest, the one who was put to death and about whom there is a legend concerning how he restored sight to the jailer's daughter?
All of those things are associated with our Valentine. But I suppose if I was defending another Valentine, we would say the same things, because these are lost, you know, in history. You know, any good story we would attribute to any particular one of them, I suppose. But sure, as you've put it, we associate all of them with our Valentine.
And can you tell our listeners a little bit more briefly about this legend about how he cured the sight of the jailer's daughter, St. Valentine?
Yes, he was a Christian, and as the persecutions went on, he was apprehended, arrested, and put in prison himself. And one of the jailer's daughters said, "My girl has lost her sight." And Valentine said he was anxious to meet her. So the girl was brought to him, and he blessed her, and her sight was restored. It's that simple and so straightforward. And in Christian and Catholic tradition in particular, I suppose, we attribute without fuss the miraculous powers to many saints who have died before us.
Of course, in recent decades, St. Valentine's Day often has a far from Christian image. It's in fact spawned, as you well know, a multi-million dollar business around the sending of Valentine cards, red roses and other tributes to one's loved one. But what do you think the original St. Valentine would make of all this commercialization if he were around today?
If I was him, I'd be flattered and delighted, and I'm sure he is, that they were associating his day, his 14th of February, with values like love, respect, mutual attraction, the need to continue the race, to working towards marriage. All of those values would be dear to Valentine, as they would be to myself if I was him. These are all good things to celebrate.
My Valentine, each day is Valentine's Day.
I was speaking there to Father Chris Crowley from the White Friars Church in Dublin, Ireland. St. Valentine is well established as the patron saint of love and romance, but keeping those sentiments alive and flourishing in a marriage is often no easy task. Yet amidst the depressing statistics on the growing numbers of marriages breaking up, I've been hearing about an inspirational marriage rescue program that offers a lifeline to married couples in crisis. Let's hear more in this special report.
I just called to say I love you.
In the US, over 40% of marriages end in divorce. That's the depressing reality borne out by the statistics, and it's an indication of the daunting challenges many couples face in trying to keep their marriage afloat in today's secularized and high-pressured society. Successful marriages, however, don't work on autopilot, at least not for long. They need care and nurturing, and it's especially vital that the spouses keep the lines of communication open between the two of them. How many husbands or wives argue frequently or feel frustrated, hurt, or angry with their spouse? It's in situations like this that all too many couples believe that the only solution is to go down the path towards separation and divorce. But if married couples in crisis know where to look, help is at hand, and that help can often save a marriage. Originating in Canada, Retrovie is a program offered by Catholic couples and a priest to couples with marriage problems. Thousands of couples headed for cold, unloving relationships or divorce have successfully overcome their marital problems by attending a Retrovie program held in various countries throughout the world. The program consists of a weekend experience combined with a series of 6 to 12 post-weekend sessions. The main emphasis of the Retrovie program is on communications in marriage between husband and wife. It gives the couple the opportunity to rediscover each other and examine their lives together in a new and positive way. The teams of couples who give presentations during the Retrovie programs have themselves successfully weathered a crisis in their own marriage. And it's their success in renewing and saving their own marriage that provides help and encouragement to the couples attending the program. Frank and Julie Laboda and Father Watt Bracken are American, and all three of them are volunteer international coordinators for Retrovie. Frank and Julie are married with four children and live in Madison, Wisconsin. They were pointed in the direction of Retrovie at a time when their own marriage was on the rocks and they were on the brink of divorce. They spoke to me about some of the reasons why their marriage was failing and how attending a Retrovie program helped to renew and heal it.
We had several problems. Basically, severe miscommunication and working opposite schedules.
So the communication issues led to us living quite separate lives. And as we worked different shifts in our work schedule, he was working days and I was working nights. And I began an affair with a woman I worked with and spent 9 months in an extramarital affair with a woman from work. Our marriage obviously went further downhill after that. And we were separated twice and 5 weeks away from our final divorce when we found Retrovie.
And how did you find it?
My mother-in-law, Julie's mother, gave her an article from a magazine in the States about the program, and I called right away and registered us for the weekend experience.
And, was it really quite dramatic, the turnaround?
It was extremely dramatic for me, but I still had a lot of fear and panic and trust issues. But it gave us hope because the couples that presented the weekend, the couples on the team, had been through misery even worse than ours. And we thought, if they can make it, maybe there's some hope for us too. And it was very grace-filled. You could feel the presence of God. And the team priest was there as well. And we wondered what the priest would have to say about marriage. But it was very grace-filled. And I was overcome with the hope that they offered.
And were the majority of the people on this program Catholic? Because you say you're open to all religions or none, or those who have none.
Yes, I think on our weekend, a great majority of them were. But you're right that couples that come to Retrovie come with all different types of faith or no faith whatsoever.
Now, the program consists, I gather, of a weekend experience, and then this is followed up with 6 to 12 week post-weekend sessions over a period of 3 months. Did you already find after that first weekend that you were discovering where things were going wrong or where to pick up the pieces, or was it more of a question of learning to trust?
I think I knew where things were going wrong before, but I was always pointing a finger of blame at Frank. So the weekend helped me realize what role I played in the deterioration of our marriage. And then the follow-up sessions were integral in change, because the post sessions offered a chance to look more deeply at specific issues like trust, conflict, sex, forgiveness. And so that was really where the bulk of the change occurred throughout the post sessions as well.
I think for me, the weekend showed me what could be right about our relationship again, and reminded me of the reasons that I fell in love with Julie in the first place and why we were together from the start of our relationship, rather than showing me what had been wrong, because you could see that in our behavior with one another on a daily basis. But being able to talk with Julie and communicate with her on a whole different level over the course of that weekend and then the post sessions really showed me what was right about our relationship again.
Is it a prerequisite that for people who go to Retrouvai that both couples want to save their marriage? Because presumably if somebody's already given up on it, then it's hopeless.
Well, in our case, Julie had given up. This was her way of checking this one last thing off of her list of things to do before the divorce was final. So no, I don't think that both couples have to be committed to saving their relationship. As long as they're committed to spending the time on the weekend together, it could change their relationship just by being there together.
Each couple is asked to participate fully in the entire weekend and the follow-up sessions. But we would be lying if everyone who came said, yes, I'm 100% committed to making this marriage work. But over the course of the weekend, most of them change their minds and decide, yes, this is worth saving.
Father Watt Bracken is a Catholic priest from Chicago. And along with Frank and Julie, he gave his viewpoint about the strengths of the Retrouvai program.
Before I go into what happens on the weekend, I think what is key, and Frank and Julie have already mentioned this, is the hope that is given on the weekend. The couples come there with a sense of hopelessness with regard to their own relationship. By listening to the stories of other couples, they recognize the fact that other people can go through difficulties as well and come out of those difficulties on the other side with a great deal of hope for their relationship. I think that is the beauty of a peer ministry. Peer ministry allows couples to tell their story of their misery, their story of their hopelessness, and how they moved to a sense of hope. And this is done simply on the weekend by three different couples and a priest giving a series of presentations. And the idea is that the couple gives a presentation with a priest. After that, the couples who are participating in the weekend are given a question to reflect. They do some writing, they come together, and then they share with regard to this. And through these series of presentations during the course of the weekend, couples are able to communicate with themselves much more deeply. What we tell the couples on a Friday night is we are not there to solve their problems or to work on their problems. What we do is work on their communication so that once they begin to relate to each other and to communicate to each other, then they begin to solve their own problems on how they choose to solve them.
Now, I don't know whether you keep statistics, but do you happen to know roughly what percentage of the couples who come to Retrouvai do manage to save their marriage? If you have any idea at all on how successful this program is?
We've seen somewhere in the neighborhood of 75% to 80% of marriages at least continue on. Successful marriages, probably half. But they stay in their relationship up to 80% of the time.
That's quite a high percentage.
It's a very high percentage. And it's an experience that we see over and over on the weekend from Friday night to Sunday.
I just call to say I love you.
But what real-life anecdotes do they have of couples attending the Retrouvai program whose marriage seemed doomed to collapse?
I can give you a story about a couple that we know. They were having difficulty. Of course, that's why they were on the weekend originally. They would do well after one presentation in their dialogue, and then they'd go back after another presentation, and they would find themselves arguing again. So on Saturday night, after the first presentation, they seemed to be doing well. After the second presentation, they started an argument, and they figured that it was no use. So they packed their bags, and they decided to leave the retreat house. Well, as happened, as they were driving out of the retreat grounds, there was a chain across the gate of the retreat house. And so there was no way that they could leave the grounds. So they turned around, they unpacked their bags, brought them back in to the retreat house. And long story short, I think this is God's sense of humor by having that chain across the gate, because this couple then continued to work on their relationship, not only on that weekend, but they themselves became very involved with Retrovi after this, to the point where they have given a good number of weekends themselves and a good number of presentations to help heal other marriages.
Do you know of any other particular anecdotes that stick in your mind?
Several, including us, but another couple that when we were presenting team on a weekend, this couple too was up and down and finally got in a huge argument and decided to drive home, and they had about an hour drive. They got about 10 minutes from home and decided it would be harder to tell their kids that they gave up than it would be to turn around with their heads hanging and walk back in the door of Retrovi. So they turned their car around and they came back and finished the weekend and completed all of the follow-up sessions.
And as far as you know, they're still
together?
And
as far as we know, they're still together and doing well.
Now, coming back, perhaps, shall we say, to the general state of marriage in society today, as you all know, particularly in Western countries, the rate of divorce is incredibly high. Why is that? Why do people give up so quickly, do you think? What more could the church and other bodies be doing to try to bring down that rate of divorce, of separation between couples?
It has a lot to do with the family. John Paul the Great was right when he said, as the family goes, so goes the world. And so Retrovi in the church, I think, is certainly moving in the right direction to curb the divorce rate.
I just think it's so hard, especially in Western countries. We're so bent on instant gratification. And if it's not what I want, I'm going to take it back or return it because it doesn't fit right. And that's carried right over into our relationships. It's not making me happy, so I'm going to return it and start over. And it's greener grass on the other side of the fence. And in most cases, in mine for sure, you know, in being involved in a 9-month relationship with another woman, it's no different. The problems are the same. You carry the problems with you wherever you go. So you can choose to stay in the relationship you started with and fight for your marriage and work on change in your own personal life and in your relationship, or you can continue to throw them away and start with a new one. And especially in the United States, we're at the point where our society says it's just easier to toss it aside.
That was Frank Laboda. And you also heard the voice of his wife, Julie, and of Father Watt Bracken, speaking about the marriage rescue program called Retrovi.
Made up of these three words that I must say to you. I just called to say I love you. I just called.
That's all from the English program for today, but we'll be back on the air at the same time tomorrow. And you can always find our programs on the internet at www.vaticanradio.org. Laudato Jesus Christus.